Very warm welcome back in the stream of Privacy Week 2020. It's day 7. It's unbelievable. The whole week is already over again. I have no idea when this happened. It's really incredible for me. Today we don't. We just have one small change to the schedule, which we'll talk about in a moment. Otherwise, check on fahrplan.privacyweek.at, where you can see the current schedule. You can give us feedback how you like this Privacy Week 2020. You'll find the possibility. Just go to privacyweek.at/feedback. You'll find a form there where you can provide feedback anonymously, so we don't have any other service providers, just with us. So tell us what you liked, what could be improved, and also just you can also tell us how great the team was, so we can share it with them in the evening. By the way, about volunteers, so we have more than 40 volunteers. We call them angels to run this Privacy Week. It's really great what the team was able to do this year. It's huge fun to be part of this team, and I'm very happy that the Privacy Week 2020, even in this format, could take place. So it was really great. Part of this team are also our translators. The next talk will be in German and will be translated into English. And as you've so you're in the right channel if you hear the English translation. And yeah, it is in German and will be translated into English.
Click on the button below the screening box, and there will be a translation into English, provided by you by our helping aid in the translation, will serve around the world.
What else? Great thanks to the Working Chamber, Labor Chamber of Vienna, and the company Nextlayer, which, they gave us, they provided physical space for our equipment, and we have quick internet uplink, so you can enjoy Privacy Week at home. So you can still support us either for example, buying one of those great hoodies or t-shirts. The URL for that you'll find on privacy.at. We also accept donations. You'll also find the link for that on privacyweek.it. Yeah, and let's talk about privacy and internet competency and all of that stuff we're talking about. Let's do it together and spread the word. And yeah, set a sign. Great. So now, our next talk, which it's not Mark who is with me here, as was said, but it's Christine. Hi, Christine. Hi. Christine, she's a colleague of Mark who just stepped in. For example, within 5 minutes, approximately 5 minutes time. So she's working together with Mark in researching, user research, and this talk is about usability barriers in privacy-enhancing technologies and how we can overcome them. So I'm very interested myself about that, because this gap between secure and comfortable or usable, usability is a big topic. And I already have my pencil for taking notes already. You can also send us questions if you want via Twitter or Mastodon using the hashtags PW20 or PW20 online, or you can use the form on the website. There you can ask questions anonymously. And now, Christine, the stage is yours. Already? Okay. Well, great. So thanks, Claudia, for the moderation and for the announcement. I'm very happy to be here. Just spontaneously, instead of my colleague. At the end, I would be really happy about a lot of questions, so ask questions if you have any. So as was said, what I want to talk about is, so how do we try to bring user research and user design together with privacy? One slide further. So our starting point is, we're thinking about the privacy paradox. So despite people care for their private data and are afraid of losing it, on the other hand, they don't really do about and they are rather they don't do about a lot of things to actually secure them. So they don't think about what happens when they post personal stuff on social media, or what actually happens when you're doing online shopping, or what it actually means to use your smartphone, which data is sent, etc. And what and how you can work against this is, for example, doing user interface or user research or user testing. So those are two methods to try to help us. Qualitative methods, like you really talk to users. So where are the problems? Where are what leads to misunderstandings? Or why do these problems even arise when you can share data so easily, and why you should care about that? And then you test systems which already exist, and you can check how you could increase privacy or security so that users actually also feel more safe when they're using it, or feel safer when they're using it. So, a good example from real life is design versus user research. So if you look at, I have the best design, I did a great thing, and people will really love it and use it as it was intended and as I thought they will use it, versus what actually happens in reality and what people will actually do. So, and this is what user research is about. And so to try to understand users and the usage and why and how they use stuff. As you can see here, you see on the left side is the way, the track which was designed to be used, and on the right side you see the track which is actually used. Short nip. A good method is research-centered design, which is an ISO-certified process. If you can break that down into four steps, more or less. So at the beginning, you either have an idea for a product, or you look at a product which already exists, but you want to enhance. And then you go to the second step, about UCD methods. So there's a lot of methods in which it depends on which phase of the product you are, or whether the product already exists. So, for example, interviews, user tests. There's a persona method, cultural probing kits, which you can use to get user feedback. And they're immediately put into development, and so integrated into development to enhance the product. And if it works in the first time, it's great. If not, you just do it iteratively until you are at the point where the output is what you wanted. So, and what's the use of user feedback? So, users should actually like to use the product. They should feel secure when they use it, and they should actually understand what they do when they use it with a good user experience. If you do that regularly and systematically integrate this in your product development process, you can quickly identify procedures or potential which lead to higher acceptance rates or to less barriers in usability, and so also in the during the use of the product. And very important is that by doing so, you can stop wrong developments, which leads to lower costs as well. So, as I said before, there are a lot of possibilities. So it depends on who are my users actually, what's my product. I brought three examples with me here, which are pretty well known. For example, like, yeah, interviews. So it could be like with a group or with a single person, depends. In my experience, groups with, if you have a group, you get some kind of group experience, a group dynamics, which otherwise you would, and which develops a feedback which you otherwise couldn't get. And it's pretty good to see that those who will use the product in the future, what they actually imagine, how they want to use it, and this qualitative insight is very important and good for development. If you don't have time, for example, so you don't have time for group interviews like now, you have COVID, you can't have like 10 people in a room. Of course, you can do all of this online, which is a positive thing about online services. You can collect more data, you can get more views of users in a shorter period of time, so you can do some statistics about it and check about features. So what do you like, what don't you like, what should stay, what should go? Or you can also check on prototypes if you have a prototype in your development. But if you have a prototype, whatever, like it's a click prototype or just a mock prototype or just a paper pencil prototype, you can already test those with users, so, and check, do they feel secure when they use it or safe when they use it? What do you have to change? Basically, what is totally bad, what is good? So you have the first opportunities and the most used to make a product rather secure, and especially to give users the feeling that they can feel secure when they use it. So, and from this, you will deduce optimization potentials, or where do you have to redesign something, also get some quick wins, or something you can do very quickly and with very little effort, but get a huge effort comparably. For example, so like put that button somewhere else would be a totally easy example. You can add functions which are missing, but you can also do like long-term developments or start, which may be a bit more cost extensive, but whatever. So still you can do it. And you also get feedback about what you definitely shouldn't change. So what your users really love and definitely want to keep. Clearly all of us know that from private experience of a lot of products, there are things you definitely don't want to change. And so these projects usually, first they look at the product. So in which phase of the product is it? Is it new? Is it just an idea? Is it already done? Then you look at the target users. Then you decide on the method. Take some time to implement the testing method, and then just check the results, and depending on what is your goal with the product. So a very standard example here, what can your user research can do. For example, here you see a TV control, a remote control for a TV, and usually you see, you know, the buttons you have to actually push. So put it on, put it off, volume on, volume down, and sometimes menu, and usually you don't need all the other 20 buttons. So if you would have asked users beforehand, most likely users, it would have looked much easier. So, and some people actually really did this example, and I suppose you know this as well. And then you get a useful remote control for your TV. So what do you really need? It's smaller, it's more compact. So development is more is less expensive, but users are also happier because they are not overloaded with functions. So what we want to say with that as a summary is you should also have a look at, don't concentrate on the features of the product, but check on the tasks that the product should do. So do users actually know what the tasks are? So not just think about fancy features, because most of the time, as you can see with the remote control, they are rather useless, and or let's say users just don't use them. So at the end, we're currently trying in one project, in one research project about user acceptance. We're also trying to see so we're in this research project, we're trying to tackle this topic from a scientific perspective and not just from a marketing perspective, about this whole usability, privacy, user acceptance. So, okay. So this is the person who should have actually talked today. Thanks for your attention and thanks. Wow, so okay, that was a quick talk.
That was great. You have mentioned quite a few very interesting things, and we have already collected a number of questions that are coming in. So let's look at it. I have to scroll in my other window first. So the first question we got, what's a good approach? What are good methods to develop user experience or develop with good user experience in mind? So the first thing really is to start early. So go to your colleague, tell them what you're planning, go to your neighbor. That's my approach. And so you have to plan a bit what kind of feedback you actually want to get. So you can always do an interview that might be very specific to that user and the tasks they need to perform. So I know from test readers, from publishing books, you have to select people from the target audience, but maybe other people that might not be part of the target audience, but might bring something special to the table. So do you mean like people who might not be using it? Well, people who might not use it that often or only accidentally use it. So so their particular needs. So we haven't done that really so far, but that sounds like a good plan to get fresh feedback, different feedback. Okay, the next question. So this is a bit hard. Which software is the most user-friendly for PGP mail? And there's a hint. The software name I didn't understand is lacking a lot of features. So that's lacking there right as well. That's a very good question. Thank you. I can't answer that. I'm sorry. But this is, in fact, one of our biggest usability problems in the field of privacy and data protection, that this is really hard to do. Yeah, that's true. Do you have a good hint, a pointer, how people can bridge the time until we have a good solution? No, I'm sorry. Or a good tip, how you can have solutions that are not that great explained well to you. I'll usually try to use the forums, how other people have tried to solve it. And you can see that some problems occur to many people, and sometimes somebody has posted something to a forum with a solution to that particular problem. So that's something we all have to work on. That we have to use things that are not that great. So often things either look fancy or they look quote unquote secure. And when they look secure, you know what I mean. How do you deal with that? Well, I have a very torn relationship to that. I'm trying, but sometimes I fall back into the convenience corner and simply do what's quick and easy. I need a lot of time to get my head into these secure tools, and I'm usually just a regular PC user, and so if it has to happen quickly, I pick the convenient solution. But I think that's something that's a trap we all fall into when if we're under stress, we're annoyed by something, or we're just overwhelmed. Maybe on a better day, we might have been able to deal with it. No, not today. I can't do it. Yeah, I know. That's sad. Is there research about this? About this behavior of users having their blinders on and not today, this is too complicated. Like, this overload, how to deal with that. Yeah, there's a lot of research. I can't quote anything right now, but I'm sorry. So I'm just asking a couple of questions directly, what I'm interested in. So I have been part of a couple projects with a longer research phase, more on the project management side and not the implementation. So I again have a different view on that as well. So here's another question. So which password managers and backup solutions can you recommend? So we're using P Suite for business, or G Suite for business. But so that's the thing where we get into the area where Google and Facebook, but particularly Google, who have invested a lot into usability. It's a feeling of security. We're paying for G Suite. It's not the free solution. So it at least feels a bit safer. So in this entire research area, do you know how much money is being spent on how users use the services? Can you repeat the question? Just speaking about Google is investing a lot into this kind of research. Do you have any more information on that? How others do that, or in terms of numbers? No, I don't have any numbers. So another question. So UCP is living it works by getting a lot of data about the behavior of users, and that's not necessarily privacy friendly. How do you deal with contradiction? So the way I understand it, so UCB tries to deal or tries to improve the user experience by analyzing user behavior data. So we had focus groups and individual interviews, and people knew that they are part or the subject of some research. So when we do research, we always let people know that they're part of a research of some research of a study. We might not tell them. We definitely need written consent for collecting and then processing that data. And what you recommend to individual developers or companies? How should they should approach a new project if they want to start thinking about user experience in the very beginning? So you should definitely plan on certain milestones and cornerstones to have a proper test, a proper user experience test, at least one. Cool. Christina, I have one more question. Are you available for a Pausengespräch, for a chat in the break room? So can you change to the Pausenraum, to the break room after this talk? Because there's a couple people who might want to ask a couple more questions. Let's see. Will you tell me how I can get there? Yeah, we'll do that right after this. Very good. Let me look at the chat if there's further questions. Christina, is there something that you would like to let people know to have them take away from this talk for their next project? Like a rule of thumb. In general, if you're developing products, think of the users and ask the users pretty much irrespectively of how, but ask, go ask them. That sounds like a very good thing. And it's simple. Actually, yeah, now that you say it. Great. So there's no further questions here. So let's head over to the break room. Thank you very much for the very quick stepping in to give this talk. Thank you very much for your insights. It was very interesting, and I hope that user-centered design will get another push. Thank you. All right. So here on the stream, there will be a quick break. We'll continue in the break room and get Christina to tell us a bit more. We'll continue in the stream at 4 p.m. and look at the Fahrplan, look at our merchandising shop. And please follow our donation link if you like. We all have 2020, so that would be very nice. Or you, if you have a couple minutes, please come to our website at privacyweek.at, and give us some feedback. I don't want to send you to the questions, but to the feedback. It's privacyweek.at/feedback, and you can give us feedback directly, anonymously, And we would be very happy to hear from you what was great, what could be done better. And of course, we'll take any congratulations for the team. Okay, we'll quickly go over to the break room. So if you want to continue in the break room, there will be no direct translation, but I have a feeling that both ladies are perfectly capable of understanding and answering questions in English. So if you go to the link that you see, can see in the stream right now, which is privacyweek.at/pausengespräche, I won't spell that for you. Just go to the homepage, and there's a link on there as well. All right, that concludes the translation of this presentation. Your translators were Demir and STB, and we'll hear you in a couple minutes for the next talk. Thank you.